Well, please come with me to the reading which we had, John 21. Now, it seems like a lifetime ago we were in John. We've been looking at John's Gospel. We're near the end of our series. As we come to chapter 21, as you may remember, Peter has fallen. He's denied the Lord three times. He needs to be restored. So, John 21, 1 to 17, it's the restoration of Peter. And what we'll do is we'll look at the narrative. We'll break the narrative into two parts. We'll look at that. And then we'll just draw a couple of lessons. So first off, verses 1 to 14, a barbecue by the sea. Now, verse 1, the disciples are back home, what John calls the Sea of Tiberias. We may better know it as the Sea of Galilee. They're back home. And says Peter to the others, verse 3, well, I'm going fishing. And the others say, well, we're coming too. And verse 3, they went out and immediately got into the boat, and that night they caught nothing. Well, verse 4, morning comes, and in the pale of the first light, there's a figure on the shore, but it's impossible to say who it is. But of course it's Jesus. Verse 5, then Jesus said to them, children, have you any food? They answered him, no. Children, we might say lads. Jesus asked them, lads, any fish? Maybe the stranger wants to buy some. Maybe he's just being friendly. But look at their reply. Tells you all you need to know, doesn't it? Lads, any fish? No. That's all they say. And it's men, isn't it? They're cold, wet, tired, hungry. They've been fishing all night. They're fishermen. It's what they do. Fished all night, caught nothing. They're utterly fed up. They answered him, no. And there it all might have ended. But Jesus keeps the conversation going. Verse 6, he said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat and you will find some. And they do as they're told. Maybe the stranger standing on the shore, sometimes you see a swirl in the water. And maybe he's seen a shoal of fish. Maybe they do as they're told because they're just too tired to resist. Maybe there's something in the stranger's voice. So they cast, and now they were not able to draw it in because of the multitude of fish. The catch is huge. We're even given the number of fish, aren't we? 153, big fish. They can't even pull it in. And it's echoes of another day, when on this very sea, having fished all night and caught nothing, their net was full to bursting. We've been here before. And in that moment, John twigs. And he says to Peter, verse 7, it's the Lord. What does Peter do? Verse 7. Now, when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he'd removed it, and plunged into the sea. Why does he do that? Why not arrive at the shore on the boat, just like everyone else? Why get soaking wet, just for the sake of a few minutes? Well, what's it telling you about Peter's state of mind? When Jesus needed Peter most, Peter denied him. Now when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, puts on his outer garment, plunged into the sea. Aren't these the actions of a man who wants to begin again? The actions of a man who in his heart of hearts loves Jesus more than he's ever loved anyone in his life. Are these the actions of a man who wants nothing more than to be at Jesus' side? So while Peter wades ashore, the others, they anchor the main boat, and then using the dinghy, they make for the shore, dragging this net full of fish behind them. And when they step out of the boat, what a welcome sight, verse 9. Then as soon as they had come to land, they saw a fire of coals there and fish laid on it and bread. Jesus said to them, bring some of the fish which you have just caught. Wonderful, isn't it? A barbecue by the sea. Think of it, the cool of morning. and you're cold and wet and tired and hungry. What could be more welcoming? Remember just a few summers ago, we had one of those little disposable barbecues, and we just had a few little sardines on it. Oh, we felt we were feasting like kings at the seashore. It was wonderful. But just think of this scene. All this, and Jesus too. Now, when Jesus says, verse 10, bring some of the fish which you've just caught, who jumps up? Peter. Simon Peter went up and dragged the net to the land, full of large fish, 153. And although there were so many, the net was not broken. You see, having denied Jesus, for Peter, nothing is now too much trouble. Everything that Peter's doing is saying something, isn't it? Everything he's doing is telling the Lord just how sorry he is. So verse 5, Jesus calls the disciples. Verse 9, he welcomes them ashore. And now verse 12, he draws them closer still. Can you see the scene? They're all a bit sheepish, aren't they? They keep a respectful distance. No one knows what to say. They're a bit like Englishmen. And then there's Peter, feeling tense. So Jesus breaks through it all, takes the initiative. He says to them, come and eat breakfast. So warm, isn't it? Such a welcome. Come, warm yourselves. Sit with me. Eat as much as you want. It's all for you. And while these hungry men stuff their faces, Jesus, verse 13, he waits on them and he makes sure everyone has enough and more. When we dine with the Lord, there's always plenty and more. When he fed the 5,000, we read that there were 12 baskets of leftovers. Now, some Christians might say, well, that's bad stewardship. Should be no leftovers. What a waste. No, it's the generosity of the Lord. When you eat with the Lord, there's always leftovers because everyone has an abundance and more. He always stocks the fridge. Verse 12, come and eat breakfast. And now there's no need, is there, for any of them to say anything. They're with Jesus. Verse 14, this is now the third time Jesus showed himself to his disciples after he was raised from the dead. Now, what can you do with hungry men? Not much. But you fill them with food, and they're ready for anything. And that's why we read verse 15, so when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter. And now the scene is set, verses 15 to 17, for Peter's restoration. Now, how many times did Peter deny Jesus? Three times. Luke gives us probably the longest record of it. Jesus warns Peter. There's Peter boasting. He says, Lord, I'm ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. Jesus says to him, I tell you, Peter, the rooster shall not crow this day before you will deny three times that you know me. But Peter's not listening. So sure, so confident. And yet within a few hours, Peter denies the Lord once, twice, three times. Then after about an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, surely this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you are saying. Immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord he had said to him, before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. The Lord looked at Peter. What was in that look? Well, it was a look that brought Jesus' words to Peter's mind, but it was more than that. It was a look to break Peter's heart. The law doesn't turn away in disgust. What do? When others let us down, we turn away. The Lord looked at Peter. And as their eyes meet, Peter can see the love that Christ has for him, a love he has now betrayed. And it's unbearable. So Peter went out and wept bitterly. But of course, in that look, there's hope, isn't there? He didn't turn away. He looked at Peter. It's not Jesus who's rejected Peter. It's Peter who's denied Jesus. So maybe all is not lost. But there is unfinished business. And here by the Sea of Tiberias, Jesus has prepared every detail for Peter's restoration. We're by the sea where Jesus first called Peter. And now, like then, Peter had fished all night and caught nothing. And now, like then, there'd been a huge catch of fish. Maybe this time the net didn't break. And now, like then, Peter feels really bad about his sin. Back then, do you remember, he said, "Depart from me, O Lord, for I'm a sinful man." But Jesus didn't go, did he? Jesus said to him, "No, you're coming with me, Peter." So maybe now, like then, there's hope for Peter. Maybe Jesus still welcomes spiritual failures. And what does Peter see? He sees a fire of burning coals, because it's beside another fire of burning coals that he denied the Lord. Everything's been prepared, hasn't it? The details are significant. There is for Peter, as he looks out on this scene, a kaleidoscope of memories. And so with everything in place, Jesus asks Peter three questions. Why three? Because in Peter's mind, there's another three. Three questions to confront Peter's three denials. Three questions which force Peter to face up to what he has done. Three questions to exact from Peter a confession of love. A threefold confession to wipe away the stain of his threefold denial. Now, some of you may know the nuances of the Greek as we come to verses 15 to 17. We're just going to take Jesus' questions as they're written. So the first question Jesus asked Peter, verse 15. So when they had eaten breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me more than these? Do you love me more than Thomas and Nathanael and James and John and the others?" After all, this is the Peter who boasted, "Even if everyone else deserts you, Lord, not me. You can rely on your Peter. They may let you down, but I won't let you down, even if I have to die with you." Is that true, Peter? Do you love me more than these? Verse 15, he said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And the swagger is gone. No special claims. "I'm no better than anyone else. After all, none of them denied you three times." It's a humble, contrite Peter. He said to him, "Feed my lambs." Question number two, verse 16. He said to him again, a second time, "Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Peter, you've wronged me. You've wept bitter tears. You've been a coward, you've been a Christ denier. But Peter, what I really want to know is, do you love me?" You see, sometimes we just want to get right with the Lord simply because our conscience has been set on fire. And we can't live with a conscience on fire. And all we want is peace. "Lord, I feel so bad. anything. Just give me peace. And you see, we actually hate feeling bad about our sin more than we love Jesus. And getting rid of our sense of guilt means more to us than closeness to Jesus. And clearing up the mess matters more than walking again with him. Peter, I know you feel bad. But what I really want to know is, do you love me? Tell me to my face, do you love me? Verse 16, he said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep. And now it's crunch time. It's the third question. Verse 17, he said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? And Peter's upset. Christ is challenging him. Christ is interrogating him, isn't he? Peter, are these just words? Peter, I want you to relive what you've done. Tell me, do you really love me? And all Peter can do is fall upon the kind arms of Jesus. Oh, Lord, I don't even know myself, but Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. You know me. You see me. And even having done what I've done, and even when I know that everything I've done seems to say I don't love you, Lord, look down within me. And these can't be the words of a hypocrite, can they? Here's a man who's being real with Christ. Lord, you know me. You know. You know all things. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. So three questions to finish the unfinished. Three questions to begin again. And each confession wipes away the stain of Peter's threefold denial. Well, we close with two lessons. And the first is this. Christian friend, is there unfinished business with the Lord? Christian friend, have you fallen? You've done it again. Do you know we have our besetting sins, don't we? We have our sins which they're like a pack of hounds. And they pursue us through this life and they never give us rest. They're snapping at our heels. And they've been pursuing you through your Christian life and you know, and it's happened again. Maybe it's not an old sin. Maybe it's a new sin. And you can't believe what you've done. Maybe it's a secret sin. And maybe you have been very small and you thought you could control it. You could have it in little measures and it would be safe. And your little sin was followed by a little repentance, but you went back to the sin and the secret sin. The little sin has got bigger. It's grown. And what you thought you could control is now taking over. And you know you want to stop. And yet you also know that you don't want to stop. And tonight, Christian friend, you feel dirty and ashamed. Maybe you feel desperate. And you know what it's like when you... And you've been caught in the lie. You sort of want to cover your head and just not be found, or just find some sort of hole that you can go and crawl into, or maybe go fishing. And you know you can't restore yourself, and you know that if nothing changes, you're going to be ruined. And you know you're so guilty, so unclean, that even your tears of repentance need washing clean. Maybe this week, maybe even today, the Lord has sent reminders just like Peter, reminders that have made you feel awful, because it's made you relive what you've done. And it seems like the Lord has been goading you and piercing you and cutting you and hurting you. Well, understand, like Peter, it's not to drive you to despair. It's not to drive you away. He's saying, there is unfinished business. Things need to be put right between you and me. And that's why tonight, in this sermon, he's come out to meet with you. Let me take a different angle. Maybe this evening, Christian friend, it's caught you out. You were fine when you walked in, but now... Or maybe this message is leaving you cold. And you've been wondering over these weeks and months, why isn't the Lord using me? I have gifts, but they go unrecognized. Why has the Lord frustrated my service? But when is Peter commissioned to care for the flock? When does the Lord say to him, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, tend my sheep? When is Peter commissioned? It is when he's restored. And that's the point. Maybe the direction we're coming in here is that the Lord is not using you because there's unfinished business. And you're in denial. And you're saying, well, it's not my problem. It's other people who've bigged this up. I've got nothing to repent of. But he's not using you, and he won't use you until the matter is put right. And that's why Jesus has come out to meet you this night in his word. So whatever the situation, Christian friend, are you willing to answer Jesus' three questions? He asks you tonight, question number one. Do you love me more than these? More than who? More than your brothers and sisters? You know, the weak Christians, because you're a strong Christian. And the young Christians, because you're a mature Christian. And the inadequate Christians, because, well, you're an adequate Christian. And the inconsistent Christians, because you're such a consistent Christian. And for years you've been looking sideways and saying, ha, look at that. Not me, Lord. You can rely upon me. You can always rely upon me. But you are where you are. And that's why Jesus says, do you love me more than these? He asks you a second question. It's a straight question. Do you love me? What's bothering you tonight about your sin? Is it being found out? Is it the guilt and the shame? Is it the lack of peace? Maybe it's getting sidelined. Was what's really bothering you? That you've wronged the Lord. And the third question he asks you is this. Do you love me? You see, when we fall, we might feel that the way back is to serve the Lord better. You know, I've done this thing. What's the way back? I know the way back is to be more committed. It's to be more prayerful. I've got to get up earlier and have a longer quiet time. I've really got to be there every Wednesday and Sunday morning and evening. I'll be there listening to the preaching. I'm going to up my giving. I'm going to get more involved in work for the Lord. I'm going to witness every day. That the way back is payback, rather like Peter being the first to be up and pulling in the net. That's you. Oh, you want to really want to show the Lord that, yeah, I'm really so sorry, and I'm gonna show how sorry I am by a riot of hyperactivity. No, says Jesus. It's not what I want. What I need to know is, do you love me? Because if you love me, love always finds a way. It's love that breaks the alabaster box and pours out the fragrant oil of devotion to Christ. If you love me, you will always find a way to serve me. What I want to hear from my bride is not, well, I'll get up earlier and I'll clean the kitchen and I'll do this and I'll make sure that sorts it out. What I want to know from my bride is, does she love me? That's what he needs to know from you tonight. So, Christian friend, three questions. The Lord is asking them. The Lord is waiting to hear your answer. So what do you say? A few years ago, I was preaching elsewhere. I was preaching on Jesus' words from the cross. My God, why have you forsaken me? He was all anguish, that I might be all joy. Forsaken, that I might be brought in. Trodden down as an enemy, that I might be welcomed as a friend. Surrendered to hell's worst, that I might attain heaven's best. Wounded, that I might be healed. Athirst, that I might drink. Tormented, that I, guilty, filthy, wretched sinner, might be comforted. Made a shame, that I might inherit glory. Enter darkness, I might have eternal light. My God, why have you forsaken me? I preached it. Afterwards, a man came and sat down next to me. Been a Christian for years. He sat there for ages without saying anything. He could barely get the words out. And then at last he said, and it's all he said, I didn't realize how much he loved me. And Jesus says to you, Christian friend, tonight, unfinished business. I've come to meet you tonight. And I really want to know only one thing. Do you love me? And Christian friend, the only safe thing to do is to fall on the kind arms of Jesus. Lord, you know all things. Cast out if you're a hypocrite. Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. We close with a second lesson. And it's an invitation to come to Jesus for the first time. I've been talking to Christians. I want to talk to you, those of you who aren't believers. Some of you may remember Stephen Lansdell, who died about 4 years ago. Stephen was in his late 80s. He was blind. He was very quick and sharp in his mind. And I can hear him now. I can see him now with his sort of public schoolboy accent, or public school accent, I should say, and sort of little, almost military moustache. He was close to death. And we read this passage. And after we read it and started talking about it, he became so animated. He started laughing. You felt it. There were times his heart almost would burst for joy. There was something of a schoolboy in him, and there was a sort of schoolboy wonder and delight and excitement at this passage. Why? Because as we read it, as we talked about it, he'd caught a glimpse again of the loveliness of Jesus. What does Jesus do for messed up, wretched, guilty, sinful, wicked failures? Men, women, boys and girls who've wronged him and denied him. What does he do? Well, he catches their eye. And then he plans a meeting. And maybe sometimes it's a barbecue. And he initiates the contact. And whilst we're doing something else, we've gone fishing, he calls to us. And when we don't want to talk and we say no, he calls to us again and invites us. Because he knows when we're cold and wet and tired and hungry and life has left us disappointed. And he welcomes us to his table. He says, no, come closer, come nearer. He draws us into the circle of friendship. Because this is the Jesus who welcomes sinners. This is the Jesus who eats with sinners. This is the Jesus who's the friend of sinners. And who waits upon them. And then when he comes to put his finger upon our sin. Oh, it's relentless, isn't it? There's a wonderful gentleness about it. Because he could break us and crush us. But he doesn't. And when it's crunch time, my friend, it's not to drive us away. It's to put us right. After all, this is the Jesus who suffered on Calvary's tree. He died that punishing death that sinners deserve to die. He did it so I can be forgiven. So I can begin again with God. That I can enjoy peace with him. This is the Jesus who doesn't say, look, I want you to go to church and keep the rules. This Jesus says, I love sinners, I welcome sinners, and what I want from them is for them to love me and for them to enjoy my love for them. He gives them an invitation to love the loveliest of all beings and to live for him. That's what it means to follow Jesus. That's what it means to become a Christian. It's to step out on the great adventure. The life that is worth living. In a tatty, disappointed world. A life that's off the treadmill of sin. And to know the Lord worth loving. That's why Stephen was laughing. That's why an old man who... in his care home, people came in and out, hardly any time for just another man who's waiting to die. But on his bed as he was dying, there was a man laughing with the sheer wonder and joy of it all. A glimpse of Jesus, the friend of sinners. He was a sinner. But all that blood had made him clean. And now he was new. And for him it was therefore not death to die, but to leave this world, to be with Christ, which is far better. A little vignette, a little snapshot of just how wonderful this Jesus is. And the invitation to be a Christian is to come to know and love and follow and worship him all your days. Until that great day when you enter his presence and the sacrifice is complete and you enter into the joy of your Lord. So my friend, what of you? Is this the Jesus of boring rules? Who's come to ruin everything? We're the ones who ruin everything. What do you think? Some of you know this so well, don't you? Do you know, if I try to get someone to eat something, and they say, oh, I don't like the look of that, you say, well, taste it. Oh, I don't taste it. And they taste it and say, oh, this is so good. The invitation to come to Christ. He's here tonight. And he's come out to meet you. And he calls to you. Says, come to me. Come just as you are. No, you haven't come near enough. Come closer. I'm the friend of sinners. Enter the circle of friendship. Let's deal with that unfinished business of your sin. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? Is it easy to love Jesus? It's easy to those who do it.